Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. This is Mike Fader with the newest edition of The Turning Point. This is a weekly show, and the way, I mean, I know I've said this a million times before, but just a weekly show seems like an odd thing to do as far as news goes. So it's just commentary and opinion, because obviously you're not going to get the news on a weekly show, because you can get it every minute on the internet or on a device or on the radio or some other way. So I'm aware of the fact that sometimes I'm talking about things which seem in this like endless stream, constant 24/7 stream of things coming over various devices, you know, happened 20 seconds ago. It seems like old. Before the internet, when I got on every week and talked about, yes, I've been on that long. When I got on and talked about a subject, it was still relatively fresh, or my opinion or my point of view on it, or even talking about the facts of an incident or an event or something that I was talking about, were relatively fresh. But now, with the endless stream of stuff, it seems old to go over things. So it has to be just observations and opinions, certainly nothing new about what I'm going to tell you. Also, in the past, I've actually almost every show I tell you, if you listen and you have something that you want to comment on, please get in touch with me. I know a lot of people listen on downloads, on podcast downloads, the archive podcast downloads. They don't listen necessarily when the show is on live. And that's the way it is with a lot of internet radio. But I would like you to contact me anyhow, no matter what. If you're listening to this show, I would appreciate just a heads up. Like, yeah, I've heard your show. or, yep, I'm tuned in. Yeah, I'm listening. I want to get an idea of who's out there and how many people are out there and who's listening. So that's all you got to do. You know, I mean, of course, if you have an opinion about what I'm saying, all the more welcome. So now, what seems to be almost a daily occurrence somewhere in the world, which is a daily occurrence somewhere in the world, but now it's getting to be far too often mass shootings. I know you don't even want to hear that anymore. I don't want to hear it anymore either. I don't want to pick up the newspaper. I don't want to turn on the TV. I don't want to turn the radio on. And it, like I said a couple of times before in the past couple of weeks, I think maybe it's generational too. If you get to be old, and I don't mean older, but I mean old. I guess I'm old. 70 years old is old. I don't feel 70, but I am 70. And my contemporaries, when they write to me, people who are on my mailing list, and by the way, if you go to faderfiles.com, if you're listening and you contact me at faderfiles.com, there is a way to get in touch directly with me. And the people who get in touch with me from the shows and who get in touch with me from the mailing list, a lot of them are contemporaries. Some people are younger. Some people are young. And it's good that it's reaching different generations. But, you know, people have listened to me for a while. And people sometimes identify with the things I say who are older. And most of those people, I think it's because they've been through so much in their lives personally. And the world is such an eventful, overwhelming, crisis-torn place. Especially my generation, it was civil rights in Vietnam and almost like domestic civil war, and it has never sort of stopped. It wasn't a stretch of time during the 50s in the United States when things sort of seemed like a sanitized toilet. Everything was in control. Everything was ordered. The United States wasn't in any massive war. We were doing plenty overseas, but we didn't know about it. There wasn't all this information pouring into our heads. So, you know, but now when I hear from people who are my age, they say, you know what, I don't want to talk about this stuff anymore. I don't want to talk about it, and I don't want to listen to it. I understand. I feel a lot that way myself. But it's hard to avoid. It's hard to avoid. I mean, actually, when you see something like the shooting in San Bernardino the other day, and followed right on the heels of the Colorado Planned Parenthood shooting by that, you know, obvious lunatic. But I don't want to fall into the hands of the argument. I don't want to fall into the argument of the NRA and the people who support giving guns to everybody, including three-year-olds and bringing guns to churches and on the subway or whatever it is that the NRA kind of people like. Everybody is supposed to be armed with 25 guns, which is that all of these shootings, all of our domestic shootings, all these mass shootings, are the work of individual lone gunmen who are very rare lunatics. Well, maybe and maybe not. Maybe and maybe not. My submission is that they reflect the culture that these people, yeah, obviously they're crazy. When you look at the guy and you listen to the guy who find out about his life, the guy who killed those people at the Planned Parenthood facility in Colorado, he's crazy. The people... the guy who, what's his name, Adam Lanza, who killed all those children, had a horrible tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut. A lot of these people, the people who do these shootings in theaters and churches and other places, are crazy, right? But by definition, anybody who just takes out a gun, I mean, in the probation department, I dealt with a lot of these people. They just take out a gun and just shoot people. And there was a guy I interviewed once and had to recommend a sentence for, who had gotten an argument in a bar with some people, went home and got his, now it's antique, it's pathetic and antiquated. He just had a handgun, you know, but some of these people still do. Well, now it's all these, you know, automatic and semi-automatic rifles. And he just opened the door of the bar and shot randomly into the bar. And luckily he didn't kill anybody, but wounded, you know, four or five people, and he was being arrested. He had been arrested for that. Anybody who does a thing like that is, at the time they do it, or in general, probably pretty crazy. And any of these people from ISIS, any of these people from these groups, Boko Haram, these organized, quote unquote, these planned terrorist shootings like the awful event in Paris, these people are crazy too. Of course they're crazy. Now, they may not be, I don't know, how do you distinguish it? Is this psychopaths, you know, somebody who's, somebody who individually is deranged and isolated and is crazy, as opposed to somebody who is in a group of people who are collectively crazy the same way, like in ISIS or in some crazy Christian religious, you know, fundamentalist militia group in the United States. But the people in, and what's happening overlaps. A lot of these things overlap, into the area of politics and culture and tribal and territorial arguments. And so you can't classify absolutely everybody as crazy. I mean, the Palestinians are routinely now knifing Israelis all over the place. And the Israelis, mostly the Israeli police and the army, but sometimes individual Israelis, are shooting Palestinians. And there are kidnappings and murders. These things are sort of ancient tribal grievances. You know, you can't just say everybody who does these things is crazy. But let's focus on this country. We can focus on this country. But it's something that the whole world is experiencing, I think. And, of course, there are daily shootings every day in this country. I mean, every single day, I don't know how many people there are that get shot. But maybe, I don't know. It's soon they say it's going to overtake the number of people who are killed in highway accidents and car accidents. It was once a staple of the chronology of things and a staple of the facts of things that more people were killed on road accidents than any other kind of violence in the United States. And now I've read that daily shootings, gun violence, kill people as often as car accidents or things that happen with on the highways or on local streets. But whether it's individual terrorism, individual craziness, or organized terrorism, terror is terror. And I think what it is, I don't think I speak for this country. I can't speak for other countries. Although a lot of this apocalyptic feeling, there's an apocalyptic feeling that goes inevitably with religions, too. It seems to hook up always with religions, and that's sort of natural because you feel like the end of the world is coming, or a lot of these groups of people who do these things feel like it's going to be the end of the world. The man in the Colorado shooting at Planned Parenthood told some people, including the woman he had lived with, I don't know if he was married to her or not, that he felt like the end of the world was coming. And he needed to act accordingly to settle up some accounts he had. And then maybe the God told him that he should settle up. So the end of the world. And a lot of these religious organizations are connected to like ISIS and Boko Haram. And most of them seem to be Islamic terrorist group. Are we out of the area now where we have to constantly balance out and say, if we say Islam or Muslim terrorists, Islamic terrorists or Muslim terrorists, whatever the phrase is, do we have to balance it out automatically if we're being politically correct or considerate, or we don't want to seem like bigots? Do we have to balance it out with, and of course, you know, there are fringe groups in every religion. Look at our own Christian militias. True enough. But right now, most of this stuff that's going on here, and including the last shooting in San Bernardino, seemed to be Muslim terrorism, Muslim end-of-the-world crazy religious terrorism. There's a feeling that I get from reading all these stories and hearing what's going on all the time, and other people get, that the world really is coming to an end. There have been times in the world because of, let's say, the plague in the, in the Middle Ages, in the early Middle Ages, the times just before or during great world wars, or times in the world in history when huge swarms of quote unquote barbarians, overcame what seemed to be civilized organizations or civilized groups and societies and just murdered everybody. I mean, there and poverty, but now we read about, and I feel like ever since this is I date myself here, but ever since the atomic bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and ever since we were aware of the nuclear threat, the threat that even though it's been much suppressed and much denied in our psyches, in our consciousness, because how else could we live with this every minute? I think since atomic bombs, and the world has always been filled with, the plague in the 1300s killed one quarter of the entire population of the world from around India all the way into England. A quarter of the population. There were so many people dying, there was no one to take care of the people who were dying because they were dying too. And it did seem like the end of the world was coming. And of course, people appealed to the Lord, appealed to God, appealed to some supernatural force to come and help them. And they thought that, and then they had to assume that things were so terrible and life was so unbearable that when they died, certainly they would have to go to some other better place. Or some people said the devil is loose. The devil is loose, and we have to appeal to the Lord. But some people seem to be possessed by the devil. It all depends on the personality of the individual. Some people act it out in a way. What would you do if you really looked around at the world? And now when you look around at the world, you might feel that the end of the world is at hand. I mean, after the atomic bombs, it seemed like we always have that hovering over our heads, that somebody's going to get a hold of some nuclear weapon and set them off somewhere, even if it's like three people in a suitcase or some country who, you know, one country lead, you know, Turkey is now maybe arguing with Russia and Israel has nuclear weapons. How many countries are there? 10, 12 countries that have nuclear weapons that seem to be, all ready to use them sometimes. And you look around at the world and you see the water is rising, the oceans are rising, and soon in historical terms, may destroy the coastal cities and the coastal civilizations of most countries. Climate is so bad, global warming is so bad that it's causing horrible droughts, the glacial ice caps are melting, the water at the top of great mountains, the glaciers at the top of great mountains are melting, and there are droughts everywhere. There's not enough water in the world. People are dying of starvation. There's tremendous poverty in the world. There are plagues everywhere. Ebola and other plagues that threaten to break out, and super plagues. There's war. There is this terrorism. And in this country too, and we've got our great droughts, and we've got all the illnesses that people have from all this. And you read all this stuff, and it does seem like it's coming to an end. And it's reflected, or is it reflected back at us when you go to the movies? Again, I went to another movie, saw a really good movie called Brooklyn. There, it's about a girl who emigrates from Ireland and around 1950. And comes to Brooklyn and how she tries to adjust to life in the United States. There is not a gun going off. You don't even see a gun. There are no explosions. There is no random, endless, gratuitous sex. Nothing. There's no loud music, thumping, crazy, loud music. It is, it's a sort of romantic, moving human drama. It's called Brooklyn. And if you get a chance to see it and you're tired of all the guns going off and the shootings and the end of the earth, the apocalyptic movies and everything is ending, aliens are invading or the oceans are going to destroy us all. Go see this movie. It's called Brooklyn. And it's a nice relief. Anyhow, generally, though, most movies and TV that you see and video games, of course, they reflect back this feeling of apocalypse and the end of the world, of violence and terrorism and random murder and insanity and soldiers and invasions and explosions and tremendous noise and rumors of wars. And you see people, and this has happened before, too, in this country, you see this tremendous income inequality at the same time. I mean, basically, we've got a country here where more and more people are, there's hardly any middle class anymore. More and more people are struggling, even though they are making what seem to be decent money, to pay even basic bills. Food is hard to buy. And yet at the other end, at the higher levels, including politicians and our quote-unquote leaders who are supposed to help us in this country of laws and the Constitution, they're in bed with the corporations. And there's a group of people at the very top called the 1%, whatever you want to call them, or you could even call them the 5 or the 10%, who seem to have all the money. So more and more people have almost no money or not enough to get by and are working two jobs and are working much longer than they ever did before for less benefits, for less money. And the people at the very top of things have billions of dollars. Billions of dollars. This is just another sign to me that the world is completely out of whack. The world is unbalanced. So all this stuff is reflected back to us in all the movies and TV and video games. All this craziness and all this stuff. And it just overwhelms us. And we naturally start to look for some sense of where do we find relief from all this? Where do we find relief from all this? A lot of the people who write to me, like I say, who are older, who get in touch with me by email on the internet, after they listen to these shows or they check my website out and read some essay I'm writing, they say, look, there's nothing I can do about this. I've tried all my life, and it's a feeling I have after broadcasting for 35 years and interviewing all sorts of people who are experts in these things, you know, war and income inequality and climate change and poverty and everything, that there's nothing, absolutely nothing you can do about it. There's a tremendous sense of helplessness. And there are ways that people react. Some people who are older get tired. They just get tired, and they say they just want to tend their own gardens, literally and figuratively. People send me photos. They send me pictures of their gardens in the back of their suburban or even rural houses that they live in. They just leave the city, and they just can't take it anymore, too much. I guess that happens when you're older. And a lot of people even drop out of any kind of political activity because they feel helpless about it. It's been, how long has it been since there was a political candidate, Democrat, Republican, that you could choose? I mean, look at Obama. Look at who's running. Hillary Clinton? I mean, yeah, Bernie Sanders, but he's not going to be the candidate. How long has it been? Decades since there was anybody to choose or even appeared to be to choose who was not part of this whole machine that is has successfully oppressed us all and left us all at the mercy of the same powerful interests that are running everything. And as I say, movie, TV, and video games, they reflect all this craziness back to us. You know, the end of the world, a lot of end of the world movies, TVs, videos, and domestically it's, violence and then they're, you know, and people buy this stuff and people are... Is it reflecting back to us what's happening, or is it influencing us? I don't think that the movies and the TV and the video games, I think they influence individual people who are unstable to do things sometimes. But I think that they don't change the culture. They are what the culture feels. They are movies and religion and art in general. Religion and art in general, the more extreme you see them be and the more extreme they are just reflecting what the unconscious and what the sense and the emotional feeling is of the whole society. And the society is overwhelmed and scared. We are all overwhelmed and scared by what's going on, and we feel helpless. And of course, we usually look for a hero, and most of these video games and movies and TV series have heroes. They have superpowers or... They are incorruptible. They are leaders with great integrity and tremendous talent. You know, you think of a movie like Air Force One, you know, where the president of the United States, his plane is kidnapped. His plane is taken over by terrorists. But he was a Medal of Honor winner pilot in some war. I don't know where it was. And he takes the whole thing back from the terrorists and manages to get rid of all the terrorists. I mean, there's always somebody that we look for. Save the planet. Sometimes they have to give up their lives to do it, but to save the planet. But all this stuff, and I was reading, and people go to religions, extreme of religions. They go to cults, you know, cults. There's all kinds of cults. I just read a terrific book. If you want to read a really fascinating book, This came out, I think, like a year or 2 years ago. It's by Lawrence Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, and it's called Going Clear. It's about Scientology, the quote-unquote church of Scientology. And it's an astounding, fascinating book about charismatic leaders of cults and about the kinds of people who join cults and what those cults do and how extremism in the world and the fear of individuals that they have that the end of things are coming, combined with the sort of the always present group of people who are uncertain about themselves and need a daddy or a leader, which is the basis of a lot of religions. How it functions and how it can take over people's lives and how it can become very sadistic and brutal, and how it and the order that it imposes and the salvation, quote unquote, that these cults and these religions offer sometimes turns out to be far worse than the situation that people are in, so that that made them come to it in the first place. So there's the thing. See, is that the order and the security that the government or religions offer you or say that must be imposed now because we're all under tremendous threat, which it seems like we are, this turns out to be the basis of tremendous sadism, invasion of privacy, police states. I also saw Citizen 4 finally about Snowden. All this stuff, the 9/11, what happened in Paris, all these things, and some people believe these things are done on purpose by the governments themselves. You know, it's a conspiracy theory thing, and which is not impossible to believe, that these things are done by the governments themselves, although I don't believe that completely, so that the government can take over and get rid of any kind of freedom or democracy. Freedom and democracy, the hardest things to maintain in the world, either in your personal life, freedom and equality, you know, even in your own personal life. A lot of people want somebody to be the boss, or they, when they have too much freedom, it seems worse than when they have order and security. So in this book, in Going Clear by Lawrence Wright, which is about Scientology, there was just they were talking about somebody who was a famous screenwriter who was part of the Scientology, you know, the Church of Scientology, whatever it is. And it's still going strong, by the way. And at one point, he had a movie that flopped. But he recouped his fortunes because he wrote the script for something called Modern Warfare 3, you know, a video game. His name was Paul Haggis or something like that. He wrote the script for Modern Warfare 3, and it made $1 billion. There were $1 billion in sales in 16 days. 16 days. Absolutely astounding. And so this is what's going on. We are terrified. It looks like the end of the world is at hand for all sorts of reasons that I mentioned, you know, plagues and climate change and war and everything. And now we get to guns. Now we get to guns. The New York Times, which a lot of people write to me and tell me is just controlled by the government and the CIA. I don't think completely, but maybe they have tie-ins that they shouldn't. But they had an editorial the other day on the front page of their paper about, and it was entitled The Gun Epidemic. The New York Times, the last time they had an editorial, a strong editorial on the front page of their paper was 1920. It was 95 years ago, almost 100 years ago. It's the fact that there are too many guns around. Now, guns, and in American DNA, America wouldn't exist. Modern America wouldn't exist without the Europeans and their guns, right? And there are murders, yes, everywhere. There are guns everywhere in the world now. But the idea of guns being used to kill people and to overcome other people and take their land, and just guns used randomly, guns used in killings and shootings, it seems to be such an American tradition. It's almost part of it's an indelible part of the writing of the history of America is guns. Now, obviously, and all these mass shootings aren't new. We've had mass shootings in this country before. People who are crazy, who had a grievance or something, who there was a guy, I don't know how old you are, but in 1966, I think it was, 65 or 66, a man named Charles Whitmore, or is it Whitman, went up on top of a tower at the University of Texas in Austin, and was a former Marine or something like that, and knew how to use a rifle, and shot and killed several people from the top of this tower, and they couldn't, and the cops had to get up there, and they had to shoot him. They had to kill him to get him to stop doing it. So guns in America, they go together, right? Now, guns all over the world. It used to be, it's not as if guns are actually jumping. This is what the NRA says, you know. The guns aren't jumping up and shooting people by themselves. There have always been mass murders, huge wars and slaughters and tribal and religious murders and great swarms of one group, you know, overcoming other groups. But it used to be knives and swords, you know, spears, bows and arrows. But still people ran amok. People were murdered without regard to whether they were innocent or guilty. They were just cut down and slaughtered. It used to be knives, guns, and swords. But you have to admit that guns make it easier to kill people. If the two people in San Bernardino or in Paris had rushed into restaurants or a stadium where people were giving a concert, or in San Bernardino where they went into a facility for disabled people, you know, a social service facility, with guns, with swords, or with knives, and start slashing and trying to kill everybody, they would have been subdued a lot easier. They would have to get right up and do it. They would have to be right on top of somebody, right next to them, right, you know, like a second away or a half a foot away. But guns just make it easier. And there are too many guns around, especially these semi-automatic, which are very easy, apparently, to alter to automatic weapons, to turn into machine guns. These AR-15 rifles and various other models that are like them. They are like the M-16s that were used in Vietnam, and I think are maybe still used by some local police departments. But guns just make it easier, and the country is sick with gun violence. It's sick to death and dying with gun violence. Yes, these things reflect something about American culture and society from the very beginning. This country was always a violent place, even when guns were primitive. When the Europeans came over here, they had guns. And as the guns got more powerful and more technically proficient, there was more and more violence all the time. So America and guns. And yes, we have our Second Amendment, but that's another whole argument I'm not going to get into. Not going to get into right now. It's an argument that, you know, the Second Amendment is a couple of hundred years old and is regarding certain political things and certain historical things that don't necessarily apply anymore. The bottom line is we don't need, people in this country do not need, and part of the argument that I understand is that the police, and we have a police state in this country, have all these weapons. And what people would like in the government is if no one had any weapons at all, it would make them happier. But on the other hand, you have to think about the fact that there are so many of these semi-automatic and then altered to be automatic and to turn them into machine guns, weapons available, that it's just, it's too much. All these guns, and then there's no background checks that are worth anything. And in states where there are more background checks, although California, I think, is one of them, you can't prevent this all the time. But states where there are more background checks, the NRA has, it seems, more than half of the Senate and two-thirds of Congress in its pocket. And it has to do a lot to do with money and the way gerrymandering and votes are concentrated in places in the country where people believe in guns and think everybody should be armed. But guns are a plague. They always have been in this country. And now it's all these automatic weapons. It would have been, it always is a lot less easy to kill people if people do not have semi-automatic and automatic weapons. But just as recently as a week ago, after the San Bernardino, whenever it was, like a couple of days after the San Bernardino shootings, the Senate, which generally is more intelligent and less crazy than the House of Representatives, the Senate defeated yet another proposal. Maybe it came from the executive or another senator, to make it harder to buy these guns, to make it harder to buy these guns. You can just buy them. They're just, I mean, I wouldn't know where to go to buy one, but apparently they're a lot easier to buy than they should be. Obviously, they're easier to buy than they should be. And so we're all living in a state of terror. Our art and our religion reflect it back to us all over the world. Various religions and some that are given more to, I have to say, if you read, sometimes you read the Old Testament or if you read the Quran especially, and there are, 1.5 billion Muslims in the world, if you read the Quran, it's very clear about the fact that it's okay. In some places in the Quran, yes, I know, I don't want to hear it. And if you disagree with this, please, you know, get in touch with me and tell me. But this is what I'm seeing, and this is what other people are seeing. There are places in the Quran and some places in the Old Testament where it's okay, where God says it's okay, or God's prophet says it's okay that if you meet an unbeliever or an unbeliever gives you any back talk or any trouble, it's okay to cut them down. And this is way before guns. But think of America and think of guns. And think of the rest of the world now. And these people have guns. They have guns, they have artillery, they have bombs. And the terror that grips all of us is that it could happen any time in any place. And what happened in San Bernardino makes us start looking over our shoulders. And if you live in New York, you survive 9/11. It just seems like anything could happen anywhere. You start to get paranoid. You start to profile people. You start to look around. I don't know how it is you can stop this kind of thing. But here it is. We're living in a state of terror. We can analyze it all we want. But one thing we can do is try to, keep these guns from being, especially any kind of, almost any kind of gun. I mean, who really needs a gun? You don't use them for hunting, these automatic weapons. We have to try to put some kind of law together, but it doesn't look like we're getting anywhere. Our leaders are failing us. Now, there's this feeling. There's this feeling of crazy paranoia and terror everywhere. When you look at the news, you just feel like the world is really coming apart for all these reasons. And these shootings, these crazy shootings in places where that has nothing to do. You know, I mean, these shootings of innocent people is deliberately by groups who are organized to do this, carried out to induce a terrified feeling, and that you're terrified all the time. It's complicated, psychologically complicated. Whether or not this is going to destroy societies, I don't know. But one thing it's really doing is when there's all this terror, people, as I mentioned before, go to religion and they go to government and they look for authority. They run to daddy. They run to daddy. When men are running amok, mostly men, and now it's women too, and blowing themselves up and shooting everybody. And you never know when a plane's going to hit something or a bomb's going to go off. And this includes people who are living in places like Afghanistan and Yemen and other places that are subject to American artillery strikes or gunship, strafings or bombings or drone attacks. I mean, they're living in a state of terror too. Almost all over the Middle East, in every place, people live in a state of terror. People in Israel, people in Palestine, people in Afghanistan, people in Iraq, people in Syria, they live in a state of terror. And the terror can come from anywhere, from the Russians, from the Americans, from the crazy people from ISIS. What do you do? People generally tend to hide, but a lot of people automatically. And it happened after 9/11 here with the Patriot Act, and it's happening in Paris now. They run to daddy. They run to daddy. They look towards powerful men, people in authority, the government with their government police powers and the army and dictators. This happened in Germany in the 1920s and 30s and Italy and other countries in Eastern Europe. Fascism, power, authority. Male power and authority takes over, and you get police states and you get dictatorships. I've mentioned this before, but I had a friend once whose father was very brutal to him, used to beat him up sometimes. And he once went to his mother and said, "Mom, why do we need men? Why do we need men?" And she said, "To protect us from other men, to protect us from other men." And this is the way the world seems right now. I was looking at a picture in the a photograph in the New York Times a few days ago, and it showed, front page photograph, it showed heavily militarized looking police, you know, with the shields on and everything, advancing on climate change demonstrators. These are just people who were demonstrating because they had the World Summit of Climate Change, you know, in Paris. These were people who were just demonstrating. They weren't violent people. They weren't threatening anybody. I mean, any kind of profile would show you there was nobody. There was, and yet, any kind of demonstration now by anybody anywhere is treated as an attack on the order and security of the state. This happened in this country. The Occupy movement, which was not violent at all, it was completely nonviolent, except that, you know, it just took over, you know, certain parts of the cities, usually public parks, and wasn't causing much harm to anybody. But these are completely nonviolent people who are protesting the fact of this horrible income inequality, which causes so much grief and misery in our society. And the police eventually attacked them, too. There are no, ever since the Patriot, ever since 9/11 in this country and the Patriot Act, and this is happening in France now. The cops were advancing, and they were all pepper spraying and using mace on climate change demonstrators and locking them up and throwing them to the ground. And the Occupy people were attacked with all kinds of military-like equipment that the police have acquired from Homeland Security. And when's the last time you read about any real demonstration in this country, any demonstration against the political order or against inequality or corporations or the fact that our government is conducting wars all over the place? Any demonstration at all, anybody who is perceived as critical, and then they got the NSA spying on everybody. So every keystroke that you write that has whatever the magic word is, jihad or government or NSA, I mean, there's probably 1,000 words or 10,000 words you could use, and they got you on their list. They got you there listening in. They know everything that you do. And so what happens with this terrorism is it's an excuse, which is why some people believe that this terrorism is set up very often by the governments themselves, you know, to get people to react, to run to them, to beg for security. So people come to religious leaders, usually extreme religious leaders or extreme or their governments in an extreme form. They will go to the right-wing end of the government that promises, or the religious leader that promises security and order. In the case of religions, they even give you a promise of paradise and heaven and the blessings of the Lord, whatever they are, on earth or in another world. Paradise, if you run to them and you do exactly what they tell you to do. People want order. And so any protest or criticism anywhere, even in your own house, probably on your computer or on a cell phone, any criticism of the government or any organized protest, certainly out in the streets, is seen as traitorous and dangerous, and is put down very brutally. The urge to run to a leader like that. Now, I could understand that. I can understand that. In my own life, I've had problems, too. Whenever I feel at my most lost or chaotic or even terrified myself, which is not necessarily connected to all these things I'm talking about, but it's, you know, a little bit of a part of it. But I've had my own troubles. I've had lots of psychiatric troubles in my life. And when I'm the most disturbed and feel the most helpless and out of control, I sort of flail around and look outside me, and I look for authority figures like therapists or psychiatrists or people in psychiatric hospitals or something I look for a place where there's order and peace and security. And even though I'm giving up at that time, like, all my freedom, you know, when you go into a hospital to be safe against all the chaos and the violence that's coming out of your own, you know, psyche, if that's the plague that you suffer from, and I sympathize because it's happened to me off and on in my life, you give up. What you give up is any sense of privacy and freedom. You trade that in. And so now we're in a position, and people are all over the world, and we are in this country certainly since 9/11, and it's getting worse. And every time there's a mass shooting like in San Bernardino, it gets worse and worse, that we will give up, that people will give up. And it seems natural that you're so scared and you run to religious leaders, and they will promise you order and peace, especially the extreme version of fundamentalist religions will promise, as long as you do exactly what Daddy, you know, the preacher or the head of the megachurch or the head of the organized religion tells you to do. This is something the Catholic Church has benefited from for, 1,500 years. Some big daddy in charge who's going to get the other bad men and get rid of them, the devils, you know, who are inspired by the devils. So religion promises you not only order and peace and security here. And of course, religion is not, you know, it's just, it also promises you community and a certain kind of peace in being with other people. That's the other side of it. But they will, the fringes and the fundamentalism and the more conservative of the religions or the parts of certain religions will promise you order as long as you do exactly what every ritual tells you to do and what you're told to do by the men who are in charge. And you run to the government. Here, the article, the editorial on the front page of the Times is the government needs to do something about this. Our elected list says the attention and anger of Americans should also be directed at the elected leaders whose job it is to keep us safe, but who place a higher premium on the money and political power of an industry dedicated to profiting from the unfettered spread of ever more powerful firearms. True enough. You run to the government and you pay the price. You trade in your security. You trade in your freedom. And you will get order and you might get security, but you will lose all your privacy and eventually you lose all your freedom. And if you start trading in, and it's a balance. The government, our political leaders should try to protect us. I mean, as individual citizens, you yourself, me, as individual citizens, what can we do to protect ourselves? You know, you go to some banquet or a luncheon at a social service center in California someplace. You send your kids to school one day in Connecticut. You have no idea this is going to happen. And the first thing you think of is, well, we need to surround every school and every place like this with armed guards who have semi-automatic weapons, you know? You have to do this, and this is the only way to do it. And then we go to the government and we say, you have to pass laws to do this. I guess that's the only way to do something. Sometimes laws have to be passed. I mean, in this country, blacks were treated a certain way. Women were and still are treated. You know, there's still prejudice and bigotry. And if you're black, if you're a woman, if you're gay, you still suffer from all these things. But it was even, you know, 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times worse before. And finally, our elected leaders had to change the laws and enforce the laws. It's the way it always is. I mean, Eisenhower had to send in, I forget what it was. He had to send in federal troops from the 82nd or 101st Airborne or something, whatever it was, down to Alabama and to enforce school integration. Sometimes the government actually has to do that. Force and random violence and terrorism has to be met with the order of society. But we have to watch out. We have to watch out. And this feeling that people have who commit these crimes, this you know, revenge feeling they have, the end of the world, and they have to secure order for themselves, the hatred they have, the envy, the misery, and they project it outwards. They just want to take everybody with them. Misery loves company. They identify, you know, they listen to some politician, some crazy politician, or some radio talk show person, or somebody who's some daddy figure, right? The head of a fundamentalist religion, or they read the right verses that are pointed out to them in a church or something like that. And it says, you must cleanse the world of these people, you know, and then you will be cleansed. So people believe that all of this trouble that's inside them, which is a difficult, complicated thing, to reach maturity, to reach decency, to reach freedom, is a constant struggle in every human being. And some people just can't deal with the struggle, and they're just seized with the kind of chaos and fear and hatred that takes over them. And they run for this. And the only way sometimes they feel like they can control things, because the end of the world is at hand, or the end of their world is at hand, is by attacking people, by killing innocent people. They want other people to suffer as much as they do. They want other people to suffer as much as they do. They can't bear to be alone with their with themselves, and it comes from inside them. So, I mean, I'm not going to do a whole analysis, psychological, sociological analysis of where this terror comes from. Comes from different places. Comes from politics. Comes from actual suffering. Comes from actual oppression that people have endured, and from poverty. And then it comes from charismatic, you know, crazy leaders like fringe leaders of religions, people like Hitler, and then even right wing politicians in our own country who come along and say, guy like Trump, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to put everybody on a list. We're going to lock everybody up. The only thing I can say finally is freedom and love. Freedom and love are the answers, but they are scary and they're harder to achieve and to arrive at, and they have to be worked at every day. Freedom and love are scarier and harder to deal with and harder to realize than order. And when you take refuge in hatred and you take refuge in order and security, and freedom is risky. And the riskiness is scary for people. People are flailing around. People are flailing around. Some people personally, internally, and sometimes whole societies are flailing around and they're looking for something. There's a quote here. I don't know where it came from. If we were completely aware and responsible for ourselves, all perfectly realized Buddhas, there would be no need for gods and demons. But we are all imperfect. We are all more or less forever children. And therefore, we locate the origin of our guilt and fear, our rage and hatred, even our love and goodness, outside ourselves, lest we be completely possessed by them. And a lot of this stuff comes from inside ourselves. We have to look inside ourselves to see what our own sense of violence and hatred and fear is, because that's where a lot of this stuff comes from, and that's where our society is made up from.
step by step, all the happy saints go marching in. And if a saint step out of line, you have to start again. Cause Jacob's golden ladder gets slippery at the top. And many a happy-go-lucky saint has made that long, long drop. If I'm late, don't wait. Go on without me. I may tarry a while. If I mean to know before I go, how come the devil smiles? Trouble down below. If I'm late,